Hey everybody, welcome to Little Things Are Big Things Education with
K-Dub.
and T-Free. We want to welcome you to a conversation about how valuable relationship building is with our students in our classroom.
We're going to cover topics like how to build connections, how to use relationships with your students to create engagement and motivate them to work harder in your classroom. We're going to talk about how everything that we've done in our classrooms is built off those relationships and help you understand that everything that we do is completely repeatable, right? You can borrow it, steal it, do whatever you want with it and use it in your own classroom.
Absolutely. And if you love what we're doing, we would also like to have you join us and go on a deeper dive with our live monthly group or join our teacher vault is what we have labeled it on the website, where you can access all of our classroom content. We have some cool stuff in there for you as well. So looking forward to connecting with you more there and helping you connect with your students.
Now, without any further ado, let's get started with today's podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We're excited to have you here for week three. We're going to get started, as we always do, with a connection activity with you. This is designed to help kind of build relationships with your students. This is definitely something you can take and use in your classroom right now at any time during the year. So what I have done in the past and have had good success with this is all throughout the school year, I'll do different ways to kind of gather the info, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, but I essentially, when I get to test time, will create story problems. And again, I'm a high school math teacher out at Bowling Green, Kentucky. And so I'll put together like story problems where I actually use the students' names and I'll use like an activity they enjoy doing. Or, you know, if I don't know what activity they enjoy doing, I'll at least throw them into the story problem where they're like driving the car or, you know, something super kind of generic, but at least their name's getting dropped in there. And that just, it makes it a little bit more fun. And like on test day, like my students really, they like look forward to, oh, who's going to be in the test this day, you know, like who made the cut, you know? And then like, I keep my own little checklist to make sure I'm not repeating the same students over and over again. And I have like a little note card that's like, okay, Caleb plays baseball. Maddie plays softball. Jessica plays the violin, you know? And like, so I keep like my notes that I've gathered either through conversations throughout the school year, just with those students one-on-one, or some of the ways that I actually gather that data is by giving like extra credit points on tests. Like I'll be like, all right, congratulations on finishing your test. Extra credit. What is your favorite movie, favorite color, favorite hobby, you know, like whatever it is that I'm trying to gather a little bit of data. And I'll ask two or three questions just to kind of gather some info there and, you know, keep it back in my bank for when I'm trying to build some of these story problems. So quick, easy connection piece for you. That's all I've really got is just building those story problems and connecting the kids into it. So they're part of the classroom, part of the assessment, and just kind of part of everything I create.
The thing I think I love most about that is the fact that you use them on a test day. Like the fact that you're making, not only are you highlighting the connection piece during test time, but you're creating some enthusiasm around a math test, which again, it has nothing to do with the math, right? Just kids are interested to know who's going to have their story told as part of a math problem in class. I think that's really, really ingenious, to be honest with you. I think that's great. Really, the only question that popped up for me as you were talking about this idea is like, what do you do to make sure that you're not telling the rest of the school something that a student might not want to be shared? Like, do you do any sort of like double checking to make sure that like whatever you're going to put in the story problem is okay?
You know, it's a great idea. I will be 100% transparent right now. Like I don't do a real good job of it, but again, I'm not like, hey, who's your secret crush? Like those aren't the questions that really thrown into my story problem. It's usually like sports, hobbies, colors, you know, like favorite fast food restaurant, like things like that, that I'm hopeful that if they share it with me, it's kind of public knowledge. Plus, at the time that I'm starting to ask and gather some of this data, they know I'm putting people's names into a test because they've seen
it.
To a certain degree, they know that whatever they share with me might end up there. And I mean, it does kind of go back to just having conversations about confidentiality and, you know, our mandatory reporting, all that kind of stuff. Like there's usually at least a day or two throughout the school year where I'm like, hey, like I want to get to know you guys. I'm going to put you in the story problems. Like I want you to be a part of the content. So PS, like if you don't want me to put something in there, like, give me a heads up or don't share or just let me know. Like that's something that's just you and me. And obviously if I'm having a heartfelt conversation with a kid and they share something, like I can read the situation and I know that's probably not something that's going to end up in next year, you know, next week's test. But no, I mean, I think that's very important to get student consent and be careful and cautious of how I'm using that information.
Well, it sounds like you've got a couple of like maybe semi-intentional like safeguards in there. I think the simple fact, like you said, like they know that these stories are things that are going to end up on the test is a part of it. So I guess actually one other thing that I was thinking of as you were sharing your guardrails there, just from a work standpoint, I'm wondering, do you change the test each period to make sure that the word problem is for the kid from that specific class, or do you?
No.
No.
Let's be real. I try to streamline my stuff as much as possible. I'll have, like, for example, the one I'm thinking of right now that we did was for my pre-calc class a couple of years ago. And like I had three sections of it. And it was all seniors for the most part, a couple of juniors, but like they all knew each other because at that point they, you know, they've been going to school, most of them together for 2, 3, 4 years and, or longer, counting middle school and everything. Right. And so they knew of each other and it was kind of fun for them to be like, oh, hey, like I saw you had, and sometimes I'll actually blend them. Like I'll know whose friends are in other classes. And so like I know that, Caitlin, Jessica, and Sydney are all in like friends, but they're in 2 or 3 different classes. I'll put them in the same story problem doing their common thing that I know they like doing. Mm-hmm. And it bridges and it builds it. It takes away some of that individuality of each classroom. That's and great. Continues to make it just we're one, you know, high school family kind of a thing. So
that's really cool. Awesome.
Yeah. So I think the only other thing I would add or talk about with building those problems is I did find, because this goes right hand in hand with what we're talking about with complexity today. I keep it fairly simple, but I found that I wanted to get more and more kids involved because, like, you know, I'd use 2 or 3 students in a story problem. And then we want to take a test for another 2, 3 weeks. And so all of a sudden, 3, 4 months have gone by and I've used a dozen students, 20 students' names. And so I'm like, how do I get 150 students involved? And so like, I'd come up with these like elaborate stories where it's like 30 students went to like this concert and they all bought tickets, you know? And like, so I'm trying to find these and like, I'll write all 30 students' names in this story problem. And like the math part of it is 2 sentences, but there's like 30 student names, right? And all of a sudden, they're like, what are you even asking in this question? I'm like, I just want to know. Hi,
I was going to say, can you hear Rinley?
I can. I love that.
We have a security breach at the Kilpatrick house.
I know. It's so good. That's all right. You guys can probably hear my echoiness in the background here. I'm recording at our vacant home we just sold because it has internet. And the new house we moved into doesn't get internet until tomorrow. So if you all want to know what NTI is all about, it's getting done what you need to get done.
That's right.
With the resources you've got. So we might end up just leaving that little piece in there for y'all as a golden nugget. But no, so going back to the story problem, like legit 30 students in it. And like all of a sudden, like what was supposed to be kind of a fun, simple thing became super complex. None of the kids knew what the question was even asking. And like it defeated the purpose.
That's hilarious. So that's, yeah, that's a great segue into this week's big idea, which is using patterns and routines to combat complexity, which we all know is the enemy of execution. So
Right.
So kind of what that, well, the first thing I always think of when you and I talk about this, the idea of like avoiding complexity for complexity's sake, right, is like where we got the name for this podcast is a coach that you and I both worked with slash for, Coach Hoyle. Shout out to Marty.
Shout out to Hoyle.
He's the one that had the phrase. He used to tell us all the time, little things are big things. And he always used to say that to us as like kind of a reminder that do one thing really well and really focus on doing the little things of that one thing really well, rather than trying to do 100 different things all the time. Yes. And I think that's really the through line. That's the spine of this episode, is the idea of picking a few things to focus on and really executing those to the highest degree possible is always going to work better for you than trying to do too much or trying to do things that are really complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And that takes me back to the idea that they would always suggest to like block one man. Cause if you try to block two, you block none.
Yeah.
Like this idea of like, do your job and trust your teammate to do their job. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many of those throughs for us. I know with football and I mean, I guess I'm making this as an assumption, but I know like in my classroom, I coach math basically is how I think of it. So I don't know how much of like your coaching philosophies you bring into the classroom, but.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go too far down a coaching rabbit hole, cause I could talk about football too, as you know,
but I
will just say like, that is one of my pet peeve isn't the right word, but I do think even calling a coach and a teacher by different names, at least in the way that I approach both jobs, it's the same thing, right? My job is to make relationships, is to build connections with kids, have relationships that are going to be long-term, that are going to help that student out, and then teaching them the skills that they need to be successful in whatever the heck it is that we're doing. And that goes from, I've coached soccer, right? I've done Skyhawks Academy, you know, being a teacher of multiple subjects at different grade levels, right? I've taught everywhere from sixth grade to seniors. So it translates everywhere. So,
yeah. And I think everywhere we've been, cause yeah, both you and I have really wide experiences from, you know, teaching middle school, high school, coaching, you know, even like elementary students, all the way through collegiate, basically, you know, like we've worked with those kinds of athletes and students. And, no matter where we've been at teaching or coaching, that's very true that like the ultimate is how can we make this streamlined and work smarter, not harder? And how do we make it easier for them to do their job and be successful? Which, you know, is exactly what we're trying to talk about here. How do we do that? So love it.
Well, I know one of the things that kind of brought, as we were talking about putting things together, I know one of the things that you really were focused on in thinking about the theme for this episode was some projects that you've done in the past and kind of the art of chunking in order to make it doable. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. And I mean, I think chunking is a great life skill. and so especially for us teachers that do a little bit of everything all the time and you feel like you're going in 17 different directions. Like something that has helped keep me sane is I'm like, okay, this 40 minutes is designated for this. And like this 20 minutes is designated for this. And like even chunking my planning and prepping and when I'm going to go respond to emails and when I'm going to, you know, give feedback to my students, like being able to chunk it, that has been helpful. And I've also found it helpful in the classroom, like when I'm doing projects, like we're doing geometry is the class I'm teaching right now. And we just got done doing the centers of triangles. And there's, you know, there's I'll use the centroid, for example, for all my math folks out there, where the centroid is the center of balance or the center of gravity, where you can actually spin it in the pinwheel. It's actually kind of fun. That's how I try to hook the students, is we poke a paperclip through the center of the triangle in the centroid, and it doesn't actually like fall to a heavy side. You can spin it like a pinwheel. Kind of fun. But anyways, it splits up the pieces in like a 1/3 to 2/3. And so like I'll ask a question that's like, hey, find this distance. And if I just throw that out there early, they're like, because like, so, depending on how much information I've given them, it might be something where they need to do 2 or 3 steps to eventually get to the answer. And so especially early on, as we're kind of introducing it, like doing that chunking and be like, all right, hey, go find the distance of AB. All right, now that you have that distance AB, like, what do we know about this? Okay, answer that part as like a multiple choice or something. Okay, now that we know that and this distance, how would you apply it so you could find this piece? Great. Okay, now replicate that process with this one over here. And so like chunking it to break it down so that they can do multi-step questions on their own, but guiding them through all those steps and helping keep it simple so it's not super complex.
Okay, that makes sense. That kind of reminds me of in our social studies world at the school that I'm at, like we've tried to become really intentional around like the first time we do a research process, we're not going to have the students independently do all 6 steps of the research process, right? Like we might give them the sources and just have them take the notes one time, and then the next time have them find the source and then work as a group or work as a class after we've picked through the sources that they've found to come up with the notes that we need to take the next step. So I like that idea of chunking. And I think the way you're talking about it, right, it applies cross curricula. One of the other things that I was thinking about last week as we were talking about non-traditional instruction is that this concept of having routine and avoiding complexity is extra important for anybody who, like me, is teaching remotely right now, right? Or in your, like, maybe even more so in your world, right? Because in your world, the schedule that you described last week, like, just the schedule is complicated, right? Like, just knowing where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there is, like, a hurdle for your kids, I'm assuming, let alone, right, for a teacher who's got 4 preps going on.
And when we had 3 announcements today to remind students to come back to school tomorrow, because it's their Friday to come back to school.
I mean, I think it's just like, even from like a meta standpoint, right? Like having some really hardcore, like these are some things that we do every day, or at least every time we're doing this type of activity, that kids can lean on so that they're not, right, so they can focus on what you want them to focus on, or as a teacher, having those routines in place so that you can focus on, instead of trying to put out fires or trying to make sure that kids are following directions correctly because they don't know what they're doing or they do know what they're doing, you can spend that time wandering the classroom, building relationships, or shortening the time it takes to do a task so that you can build in connection activities as a part of your routine for the day, right? So I think it goes both ways, right? We need those as teachers and the students need them too.
Yeah. I mean, if you're spending 45 minutes on email clarifying questions on how to do something, that something happened in your directions. And like I've found myself guilty of like complaining, like, why don't these kids get it? I'm like, you know what? When it ends up being 7 or 8 students with a similar question, I start finally being like, okay, maybe it's me. maybe I did something that was unclear. And actually, my wife will sometimes help me. I'll put something together and I'll have her proofread. And she'll be like, that makes no sense. And I'm like, dang it. Okay. What am I missing? You know? And so, I don't know. I think having somebody else read your instructions is always a good idea to help make things streamlined and to the point. And, another thing I learned too, this actually came from Challenge Day. When we got on the microphones and we were trying to instruct people to move from one activity to the next activity. And this is great for you know, teachers as well. But when you've got a room of 140 people and you're trying to do this, like, and you've got two speakers in a half of a gymnasium, like, you got to be very specific with the words you use and what you're requesting them to do. And if I start using more than like 10 words, they've zoned out. They start just dragging their chair wherever they feel like dragging their chair to. And like, you know, you've seen this in your classroom where like, you're like, hey, everybody, I need you to put away your notebook. And then I need you to get up and go grab an item from the desk over there. Wait, no, actually just send one person to grab it for your whole group. No, just send one person. Hold on, come back, you know, and you never stop to like recalibrate. And so one of the things I learned was if I started saying something on the microphone and 15 or 20 people are doing something opposite of what I was trying to instruct, I had learned to just go, oh, whoa, hold up. I wasn't clear. Let me try real quick. Everybody freeze. And like actually let it come to a halt. Because like once when there's movement, a lot of times feet moving means mm-hmm. your ears aren't really listening.
Yeah, for sure.
Like trying to give very crystal clear directions, and if you don't have them, or if something changed, or you want to make an adjustment, like grinding it to a halt real quick, making it clear, landing your point, and then allowing them to execute again. And like, okay, in a moment we're going to, that was one of my favorite phrases we did. Instead of like, hey, everybody go grab like a pencil or grab a packet from the back, right? And like people start going while you're still giving directions. It's like, hey, in a moment we're going to, or when I say go, you know, and it's little simple things like that, but it allows them to stay with you while you're giving all those clear instructions so that you're less likely to have all that chaos.
That's like in web, we had a very similar, like when I clap my hands or when I say go was a key phrase, or like a trigger word to like, now it's okay to move, right? Wait. And then yes. it's okay to move. One of the things that as you're talking, I'm thinking about as like a common theme between both your chunking conversation and this idea of like not having your instructions be complicated is just the idea of giving too many instructions at once, right? Like that's like a theme that weaves throughout that. And I think about that specifically as it relates to as a social studies teacher, like writing prompts, where if like all of the stuff that's in like, hey, I want you to talk about this, I need you to use this quote, here's how that quote needs to work, da da da, and you go through all that instruction, and then the kids are like, wait, what am I supposed to write?
Yeah, the overload.
Yeah, and so like you end up getting these kind of like wonky written pieces out of that. And so one of the things that I've learned, it kind of goes back to that idea of like also chunking your purpose, right? Like today I want you to learn how to find a source. Tomorrow I want you to learn how to take notes. Like with the writing process, I got this from a little bit of one of the Gallagher books about reading as an English teacher and then just talking to other English teachers, right? Like sometimes the only thing I want to do is develop your writing stamina. So I'm not going to give you any instructions because I don't want to waste any time on what we're supposed to write about or what the form is. I want you to, your pencil or your pen needs to be moving for 30 minutes. I don't care if it makes sense. I don't care if the spelling is good.
Right.
If you get stuck, draw squiggle lines, but your writing utensil is going to move for the next 20 minutes, right? Like that's all we're doing. And a really simple, clear cut, like sense of purpose is something that I've started using more and more as I've gotten more experience as a teacher. It's just like, hey, right now we're focused on this one thing. And that really eliminates the need to even have the multi-step directions, right? Because like right now we're just writing.
Yeah.
And maybe tomorrow the step is to start talking about peer editing or whatever the hell you're going to do with that written piece. But like right now, this is the one thing that we're doing. You don't have to worry about anything else. So you can just execute the thing I'm asking you to do.
Yes. No, I love that. And I think a lot of that is directly tying into this idea of like our focus and like how do we make sure that what we want them to do is what they do? And like, mm-hmm. how do we direct their focus to that point? And, you know, like there's so many different conversations on focus. Like you can have conversations about like, you know, sunlight does not catch us on fire, but if you take a magnifying glass, right, and you harness that into that little laser beam, like you can set something on fire, right? And you can get that intensity. Or, you know, our brains are literally designed that whatever we have conditioned ourselves to think or believe is what we see, right? And we see that all the time with that confirmation bias, right? And we see this in social media now too. Like your feed is full of all the stuff you already believe. And so you see it. And all, anyways, but like this idea of focus, and like your brain actually legit has like a piece that filters all the other stuff out, so you don't even see it, right? The reticular activating system, right? The RAS piece. And so you actually have this thing go on where when you put your focus on it, you don't see other stuff. And I was talking actually with my students today, we were taking a test, and like they came in and the first thing they said is like, hey, when can we do a retake? I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. If you are believing you don't know the answers and you can't find the answer, you are right. I was like, you have these notes. You were here with me for the last week and a half. You've at least heard this once, even if you never studied. Like somewhere there, it's there. You've got to change your focus. You got to change your belief on it. And like you'll be able to find it. And so actually I want to do a fun activity for those of you who have not done this before. This actually will be a really good hands-on kind of experiment of what we mean and how our brain behaves. So I want you to take a quick look around your room, wherever you're at, your bedroom, your car, wherever you're at, even if you're like driving and listen to us. I want you to go look around and find everything in your room that is red, the color red. Find shoes, the stoplight, you know, whatever is near you, finding it to be the color red, a t-shirt, a stop sign. Maybe you've got a painting hanging up in your room. Whatever is red, find all things red. All right. Focus on all the red. Now close your eyes. And if you're driving, don't close your eyes. Sorry. close your eyes. And I want you to think of all the things in your room that are the color green. Now open your eyes and look for things that are the color green. I'm willing to bet you found a whole lot more things that are the color green when you opened your eyes back up and looked for it than when you closed your eyes thinking about red. Right? So this idea of wherever you're putting your focus on, you're literally, that's all your brain's going to see, and everything else has been filtered out, because we intake so much information all the time that our brains literally would be overwhelmed and shut down on us if it didn't have that filter system for us to allow us to see certain things and focus, right? So anyways, that's one of those things that, like, for my students, I know 100%. If they are focused on their phone, they're not going to listen to my lesson. If they are focused on how they don't know something, or they can't learn something, or that they're never good at math, they're going to show up and they're not going to give me effort, and they're going to believe that they're no good. And even if they get the question right, and I had this happen today too, they said, hey, I got a decimal. I don't think I did it right. And I was like, you can get decimals in math. It's okay. I know most of your teachers have given you really nice answers for a really long time, but the right answer can have a decimal. And it's, you know, it's all that conditioning. So we just need to change our conditioning and change our beliefs so that we can open our view to more than what we have currently allowed our filters to have. So
that's great. There's kind of two things that reminded me of, or I guess one thing that you reminded me of, and one question I have for you from that. I did the activity for those who couldn't see me on screen, because I've never done it before. I guess my first thing is, that also reminds me, I think I've had at least three teachers. In my mind's eye, I can picture three different posters in three different classrooms that said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you are right.
Yes.
Right? And I know it's corny, and it's like, it's one of those, but it's also something that we repeat for a reason, right? Like there's a reason that that statement is out there in the world for us. And so then I guess just my second question is, do you do that? What'd you call it? Reticular
activating system.
The reticular activating system. Sounds very technical. I like it.
It is. It's very science.
Do you? It's very science. great word. My question: do you do that with your students? Like, do you have them do that activity?
Oh yeah. Class?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it would fit in with like some of your goal setting and some of the other like quote unquote non math things that you do with your kids. So
yeah. And the first time my kids start to complain and I try to talk to them about the power of negative self-talk, that's one of the first things we do is like where your focus is going is like where all your energy is going to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever you put into the universe, you know, is like what is going to show up, right? Like a phrase that I'd heard is this idea of like, as we think, so we feel, as we feel, so we act. Mm-hmm. It's like this idea that like your thought process starts all of your feelings, all of your emotions, and all those emotions are what actually creates physical motion, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, every time my kids complain and they are frustrated, I quickly remind them to shift their focus and keep it simple. Like, what do you know? Right. And in this, going back to keeping it simple, and the complexity is like you're trying to make this hard because this test has six different topics, right? Like, or different activities that we needed to be accomplished. Don't think about six things right now. That's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. What does this look like? Okay. It's got, you know, and I'll use again, the test we were doing today, you know, we're looking at the centers of triangles. Does it have a midpoint? Yes. Okay. So, based on that, which two possibilities could it be? Okay, cool. I know it's either going to be a circumcenter or I know it's going to be a centroid. Awesome. Okay. Now, does it go to a vertex or does it come off at a 90-degree angle? Comes off at a 90-degree angle. Perfect. Okay. You now know it is a circumcenter. Okay. See, you just break it down. Think about the little pieces and you know what you got, right? And if you try to take on too much all at once, it overwhelms us and we shut down. Your brain literally is designed to help protect us. And so it shuts us down when it becomes too overwhelming.
Well, and to like connect this to something that I think will hit home for a lot of teachers, right? Like what's one of our least, like at least at my school, it's universal, right? The question that we all hate as teachers that we talk about when we're in teacher conversations is, do not ask me what I can do to get an A in this class, right? Like that is the most infuriating question, or at least it's in the top five of things that we talk about as a staff, right? And so I'm really active with telling my students, like, don't ask me that question ever. I say it right up on front on day one. It's one of my day one, quote unquote, non-negotiables is don't ever ask me what you can do to get an A in my class. You can ask me, what can I do to improve my use of evidence as a skill? You can ask me, how do I improve my skill of research or note-taking, right? Like trying to flip that focus to, if you focus on the skills that we're trying to get you to work on, the grade will take care of itself, right?
Right.
But if you're constantly just worried about how do I get to 90% or how do I get to 95% or whatever number you've put in your head, right? Like I've got one student who I think I've talked about before on the podcast who just like feels like she has to have 100% in class, right? But we're going to talk about the devil of trying to be perfect later, but like, just that concept of like, you're focused on the wrong thing, right? You're not focused on what skills and what knowledge you're gaining. You're focused on a number that has nothing to do with modern world history, right? So
yeah,
I think that's something that all teachers can relate to is trying to get kids to shift their focus away from one thing and focus it on what we want them to focus on.
Absolutely. And since you brought up the top five things that we hate hearing, I think this ties straight into it, and it's a focus redirection too, right? Is at least in math class, I get this one all the time. When will I ever use this? Right? Like, why is this important? And like a lot of times, they see the one example that got given to them is the demo, and they're like, I don't need to know what a circumcenter is, and I'm like, you're right. You're probably not going to call up your friends and say, hey, can we go meet at the circumcenter for dinner tonight? You know, like, but you are going to be like, hey, can we find a restaurant that is centrally located and equal distance from all of our houses? That's the circumcenter, you know? And so, trying to let them know that like, yes, you may not use all of this in the exact example I have presented it to you for the very first time. Mm-hmm. However, if we can shift our focus to problem solving, taking bits of information and you know extrapolating that into something bigger, something that could be more real life-ish, you know, like all of a sudden we get away from, okay, like this is not something I'm going to use in my life, which they might actually end up using, they're just convinced they won't. So they believe it and they're right. You know, all of it ties back. So I don't know. Focus is big.
Yeah, I could definitely like raise my hand and say I was the kid who was in math class, like, when the hell am I ever going to use this? And right. The answer was never, because I avoided it for the rest of my life because I didn't have the confidence that I learned the material. Like, I still avoid math, even though my best friend is a math teacher. Like, I still avoid like doing math in my day-to-day life because I've convinced myself that I'm not good at it and that I don't want to deal with it.
Like, to this day,
yeah.
20 plus years later, you're still like, I will not use math.
I am 36 years old, and like, we were talking about my dad being a coupon cutter before the episode started, right? Like, and part of the reason that I'm not going to figure out if it's going to save me money to go to Fred Meyer versus Safeway is like, the math is not worth the stress to me. Like, I'm gonna go to Fred Meyer because it's easier.
Right. Right. You're like, it's down the street and I know where everything is in that store.
Yeah. And I don't want to do math to figure out how I'm going to save money.
It's my comfort zone. I'm happy here. Leave me.
So speaking of like knowing where things are, I'm going to pretend that was a great transition. We also wanted to give people some examples of routines that we use. And I'm going to go first, if Tim doesn't mind me going first.
Do it.
On just some examples of routines that I use. I'm going to really focus on a couple in depth that are ones that are related to routines for building connections and building relationships, because that's ultimately the point of the whole series of the podcast. But today is also just the idea of building routines to create some simplicity. So one of the things that Tim and I have already talked about, we both use music extensively in our classroom. I don't know if you do this, but in addition to using it at the beginning of class / before class starts during passing time as kind of an energy booster and an opportunity to create connection, because the playlist that I use in school is one that my students have given me for the most part. Every once in a while I pick something that I want to listen to, but whatever.
yes.
But I also use music as part of my routine in class, right? Like, for example, we were just talking about the when I say go or whatever. Like, I will often say, when the music starts, you can do the thing. And so oftentimes, if what we're doing doesn't require quiet time, which is something I think that we over mythologize in classrooms, is that it needs to be quiet all the time in order for it to be productive. Like, so a really good example of that would be a gallery walk, right? We've got 8 images up around the classroom. You're going to be walking around. You're going to go to the first image. You're going to stay there until the music stops. And then when the music stops, you're going to move to the next one. And then I'll start the music when it's time to start taking notes on the second one. So I use music a lot as a literal cue for it's okay to talk. It's okay to move. It's like, whatever that thing is, the music in the background is their cue that it's okay to do the activity. I do that one a lot. One that has nothing to do with building relationships. I always have my agenda posted on the screen at the beginning of the day. Like, this is what we're going to do. We know that kids are more successful. We know that humans are more successful if they can kind of plan in their brain. Okay, we're going to go from this, that, to the other thing. You know, and that has like the resources that they need that day. It has reminders about due dates and stuff on it. There's usually, when we're in person, I usually try and have like a funny GIF of some sort, like underneath the date and whatnot. And then one thing that we added last year, I'm in I think I talked about this as well. I'm in a 9th grade community that share, where the English teacher, the physics teacher, and I share the same students. And so one of the things that we started doing last year is that we all gave the kids time at the beginning of class to put stuff in their planners for all 3 subjects. And we invited the PE teacher and the health teacher and the, you know, the other classes that we knew most of our 9th graders had to give us information about what was coming up, so that they knew every day there was going to be a dedicated time to put stuff in their planner. And, you know, I told kids phone is okay, right? Like, for me, I might be 36, like I just said, but I'm not going to use a spiral planner that I'm going to walk around with or have to, I'll lose it first of all. So, but if it's in my Google calendar,
right.
Right. Everything goes to my Google calendar. So,
especially when it gives you that 10-minute reminder, like, oh crap, I gotta go.
Yep. I use journals that stay in the classroom. I think that's a really just like making every kid have that. So that's the one hard copy thing. I've got crates in my classroom with the periods on them. They usually get destroyed during the course of the year, but there's a folder that each kid can put their notebook in so they can find it fairly quickly. And then I do some things with note types, like, hey, today we're taking keyword notes. Today we're using Cornell notes. Today we're doing a Venn diagram, or we're doing vocab notes. And they know how to structure that differently, right? Because I have different expectations for that. And I explain why we use the different structures. Yeah. But two that I want to talk way more in depth on, and I think the one, and we'll put this in the vault. I think this is a great resource. I call it a conversation calendar.
Okay.
And for those of you who have, again, I'm referencing Gallagher. I can't remember his first name. He's got a bunch of books like Read Aside and things about like how to teach reading. He's got a concept called a double entry diary where you kind of like write about your what you've read that day, and then the teacher responds to it, and you kind of go that back and forth. So I stole that idea because I don't teach reading, technically speaking, as a social studies teacher, specifically at the high school level. But I created these things that I call conversation calendars, and we do it every – we don't do them. We're not doing them in online learning. I couldn't figure out a way to do it when I wanted to. I am going to use them second semester. But last year, every Tuesday, conversation calendars. So what that is, I would sometimes have a content related question, but oftentimes not. Just like, you know, how was your weekend or whatever. Kind of similar to the mic check activity that we talked about last week. And the kids write there. And then I always tell them it's 5 minutes. You have to fill up the box, right? You either have to fill up the box or write for the full 5 minutes. And they can, you know, tell me what's going on in their lives once they're done answering the question, whatever. And then I go back through, and this is why it's a conversation calendar, is I will then read every single one of those and respond to each kid handwritten in their square. And then they get it back the next time. And they're you can always respond to what I wrote in the next one. So the reason I think that's such a great thing, one, the routine of my kids knew that every Monday we were going to do this warm-up activity. Every Tuesday we were going to do blank warm-up activity, right? So they knew that routine. So that was another routine in and of itself. But the conversation calendar was a really good way to develop connection because kids would tell me things in the conversation calendar that they wouldn't necessarily share in another format. So I learned a lot about my kids in kind of random ways. Like I'd have kids share things that were connected to something that I asked that was like tangentially related to the content sometimes. And it brought up this thing that was going on in their family for them that they decided to share out about. So it was just, it's a really good way to get to know your students in a really important way. It is important to tell them that, you know, anything they write on the calendar, that's a mandatory report thing. Again, I'm a mandatory reporter, but, I found that to be one of my best ways to connect, particularly with my quieter students. And or we all know that there's a lot of kids like this, right? They're boisterous, they're loud, but they're using that as a shield to cover up something that's deeper on the inside, right? And so they're able to share that inner part of who they are because it's a very private situation. So conversation calendars are an awesome routine to get into that will help you develop connections. And then another one that I've done that I think is really good for developing connections is every year we do a process at the end of each semester where I make my students prepare for a student-led conference with their parents where they're going to talk about what they've learned, things that they're impressed with themselves that they've done during the school year. And then I make time at the end of the semester to meet for like 2 minutes with each student. You know, I just call them up to my desk. Or I have couches in my room. We'll sit at the couches and just like, hey, what do you want to talk about? What are you thinking about? And that's a really cool way to kind of force students to be reflective about their learning, but it also builds that relationship of you might not have realized that the student was proud of thing X or thing Y that they did, and now you're learning that. Depending on the school that you're dealing with, you might not be able to actually have the conference take place with you there with the teacher and the student and the parent, but you can at least have them spend that time putting their folder together and thinking about talking to their parents about what they're proud of. So those are two routines for me that I've used. The conversation calendar is the one that I would, if you were going to ask me like, hey, what's the number one routine that you can do to build connections? I think everybody can do conversation calendars and have that be something that helps you spend more time working with your kids about what's going on with them.
Right. No, that's so good. It, when you started talking about the conversation calendars, it made me think of Freedom Writers. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
So good. Anyways, if any listener who has not seen that and is a teacher and you want some heartfelt goodness, go dive into that one and watch some teacher going above and beyond to connect with their kids in very rough life experiences and creating a family. Oh my goodness.
So, yeah.
Anyways, I love those. Thanks for sharing those. I I'm going to jump in, I think, with also just kind of my structural ones, because this is something that I've almost been like, you know, patting myself on the back a little bit, like complimented for, is like the structures I use on my class calendar and inside my Google Classroom, which is our school's format for organization, right? And so like when you go into my class calendar, you know what was done that day, when it's going to be due, and there's an attachment for the assignment if there was an assignment, and there is a video of either me doing it or somebody else doing it attached. And so like my whole goal, and I got like almost zero emails my very first year teaching, because my goal was a student could pass my class whether they were in my class or not. And this was what, 7 years ago, and or eight, oh gosh,
was it, it's like 10 years ago, but
yeah, it has been
old. It was like 10 years.
Anyways, it was one of those where like COVID wasn't a thing, right? But it was like I wanted to make sure that my routines were set, that every single student had the opportunity to succeed, whether they were in my class or not, or if they needed additional support or not. Now, granted, I realize this was heavily reliant upon internet. And like, I get that not every family has internet and things like that. So trying to provide additional resources is something that I had to develop as a teacher. But in that moment, like the students that did have access to it, like it was a game changer. And like, I still, to this day, obviously now in NTI, you know, I record every single Google Meet I have with my kids. So they know that if they had something come up and they had to walk away from their screen for a moment, or if they were late because of whatever reason, or, you know, they can always go to a very specific location in Google Classroom and they will see the Google Meet recording for that day, and they know it's always there. Like, that is a routine I do. They can always see it. The homework quizzes I do, they know that they're going to get one homework quiz for the entire unit. And so I call it a homework quiz because, you know, it's graded on accuracy, not on effort. So I call it a quiz. But they can go back and change their answers, and they know if they got it right or not. It doesn't give them the right answers, but every time they submit, it tells them if it was right or not. And then there's videos embedded in there that teach them how to do a similar problem. And so like, they know that when I need to go do my homework, it's going to help prepare me for the test. And the test is going to be very similar to the homework, with different numbers and maybe a slightly different, you know, application or something, but it's very consistent. It's very routine. Every single unit has exit slips to check their initial understanding. Every single unit has this one homework quiz that has embedded videos. Every single unit has a unit test, you know, and so that routine stays intact and they can access that whether they're in person or not. And then a couple of things that I enjoy doing to connect with my kids. One of them, it was actually, if any of you guys use the Pear Deck has a free template for social emotional learning. And one of them is the Tell Me Something Good. And so you can have the kids, you know, you just put it on there. It's like a bell ringer as they come in, and they come in and they just tell you something good. And they know that they got a chance to bring, you know, dump whatever's going on. Or you can do like the different meters of like how they're feeling. And that's a good connection activity. And then one, you made me think of this when you were talking, and I haven't done this for a handful of years, but just because it takes a lot of time, but the kids really enjoyed it. I call them video journals. And so once every 2 months, I think, is when I did it. So they did about three or four of them a school year, basically. And they would go back with as many friends as they wanted from their class or from other classes, or shoot, bring in somebody that's not even in my class that they want, right? And they build a video that talks about their favorite topic they learned in the last 2 months, and then how it can be applied in real life, and then create a problem and solve that problem. And, you know, some of my students, they do the bare minimum. They get the boxes checked. They're done, right? But they still get this creative piece. It does a little bit of video editing, and I'm a big believer of teaching usable skills that are, you know, soft skills, I guess, if you want to call them or whatever, but a little bit beyond our state standards. But then the biggest thing is, like, just like you said, with some of your calendar talks, journaling stuff, the calendar conversation, sorry, I'm blanking on your name right away, but they got to actually write or do the journal, the video journal, on what they enjoy. So, like, I had middle school kids that would legit, like, build their own, like, pet hamster that was taking over the world and had to solve this problem or the bomb would go off. Like, they built, like, their own, like, 6-minute, like, full feature length movie. It was so much fun. Like, I loved it. It was a great connection piece. And then the part that I really made the connection with them and they loved the most is I took, you know, 40, 50 videos that came in that were all a minute to 3 minutes, 4 minutes long. And I'd grab 15 to 40 seconds of it and I'd splice it into like a highlight reel. And then on Friday, after we took a test, we'd watch the highlight reel and everybody wanted to see themselves. It was so much fun. So
yeah, that's awesome. You're also reminding me that there are a lot of days in the week when I miss Tim and I, we talked about it. We both taught middle school for a while. I miss middle schoolers. They're
so funny.
If you can harness the energy, it's a really fun group to be with. Or if you can just accept that every once in a while things are going to go off the wall, yeah. Just yes. Be okay with that. It's a fun group to be with. Yeah, that highlight idea, like the combination. I know we're kind of bookending here, but like to me, like I'm thinking about as a kid who hated math, as we've now talked about a couple of times, the idea of being in your class and getting the excitement around potentially being in the test and then having like a video highlight of everything that was good for everybody that week or that month or whatever. Also at the end of the test, like it's funny to imagine myself wanting to be in a math class so that I could be there for test day.
Right.
If I could just get to the test, everything will be fine.
Right. Love it.
So I think it's about time to probably transition to story time, and I think I'm up this week, right?
Yeah. What do you got for us, dude?
So mine is going to start with, like, I was trying to think of something to loop back into this idea of routine and having a process in place. And the story that I thought of was, and this was, you probably could have told the same story, but it was the worst. I'm 12, 10 years into teaching, whatever it is, about 6 years ago. I kind of reached my peak of, and I don't know if this is the same for everybody or if it was just me, but near the end of October and then right around in May, I would always kind of get to a place where it's like, I freaking hate this. I don't like, there's 500 things that I'm pissed off about. I'm not really enjoying, like, I swear to God, at the end of this year, I'm quitting. I'm going to go do something else. I'm going to go get paid for once. And I would just get so, like, kind of just like, in a place of like frustration and giving up. And the story that stands out to me, it was about 6 years ago. It was near the end of October. I was also nearing the end of one of my first years as a head football coach, which is a whole nother bag of energy that you're trying to carry around with you every single day. But it was, you know, we were getting to the end of the season. So the season was coming to a close. So that was definitely part of it, right? It wasn't just teaching on its own. But and it was like the end of a grading period, like quarter one grades were due or something like that. And I was way behind on grading. And so I had a bunch of grading to do. And so I was just like, my whole weekend was spent around doing the things that I didn't want to do. Right. Like, and I'll be honest, grading is my least favorite thing when it comes to teaching. If there was like, if I could give a portion of my salary to have somebody else just take care of the grades and the grade book, I would consider that a worthwhile investment. So I was doing all this grading and I was in a really angry place and I was like getting fed up. And my wife basically told me to stop being a crotchet monster and to chill the hell out. But she's also, you know, she's great. And so she also like took the time eventually when I was ready to talk about like, what's the problem here? And it was what it came down to in that time of just like all of my focus was on the things in teaching that I didn't like, right? It's all the bureaucracy of, I mean, there's the grading thing, you know, it's like other, you know, the things that we all do, right? Like I got to fill out this form that I probably was supposed to fill out 2 weeks ago for my observation that was coming up. I've got this other thing that I'm supposed to be doing because there's, you know, the videos that you have to watch to make sure that, you know, not to touch the children, like all these things that we have to get done. And so it was just, everything was coming to a head. And talking to Carrie about it, what I realized was I was, all of my energy had gotten sidetracked into doing the things in teaching that I did not like.
Right.
Right. And so I found, as I looked back that day and was kind of thinking about things, like, God, this always happens in October. And then literally that same year. And so I had, like, I wrote that down. I have gotten pretty good at, like, writing things down during the year in a document to come back to at the end of the year. So, you know, same year going back, now it's May, and it's, you know, early May, right? Because once you get to Memorial Day, everything's easy. But, like, it was early May, and I was in that same place where I was just frustrated. The kids were even pissing me off, which is a really rare, like, moment for me to be, like, angry at the kids about things. And so it was, like, I was bitching about it to my wife, and it was the same thing. And Carrie, again, was like, okay, so we're having the same conversation now that we had 6 months ago. What the hell's going on here? So, like, looking at the notes, and what I came to find out was really during my first 6 years, end of October, early May, there was always this kind of peak of frustration and anger around the job and not really wanting to do it anymore because I wasn't getting what I wanted to get out of it, which is the relationship piece, right? So what I've found as a good solution to that, to allow me to keep teaching, right? Because if I'd have gone on that path, if I would have stayed on that same path, I wouldn't be doing this anymore. So the thing that saved me is being aware that this is a problem, right? The first step of solving a problem is identifying it. So noticing it and then being very intentional about creating a routine for myself to make sure that I could control what was happening during that time of the year. So, right, like, we can't control grading deadlines. We can't control when observation paperwork needs to be turned in, right? We don't have any control over that stuff. But we're going to talk about this in another episode, I think, but I do a lot of planning in the summer.
Yeah.
For the school year, particularly the first semester, I usually have, like, basically every day of first semester, like, I know what I'm teaching each day, and I have, like, an outline of the day. I don't have everything done, but I've got a pretty solid outline. What I started doing was identifying, okay, this is about that time of year when things are going to get sideways for me. There's two things that I always schedule for the end of October and the beginning of May. One of them is a feedback survey so I can get some information back from my students. And to be honest with you, there's two reasons for that. There's one is just as like a, is there a need for a course correction for the sake of the students at this point in the school year? But also, and this is part of why I miss middle school students, because they're even more likely to do this. What happens, I think, when we reach out to our students and ask them how things are going, we're often going to get some positive feedback, right? And just having like that confirmation from students of like, hey, I like how this is going, is like a helpful, just like, okay, like that helps me get to that next step. And then the other thing that I do is I always plan in between units as much as I can, finagle it in that part of the calendar, a day where we're not doing any content. We're going back to like day one, getting to know you, having fun. Webb uses the acronym BAPSE, beginning the almost perfect school year. Just this idea, like we go back to like those kinds of activities where we're literally just playing together and having fun. And I actually did that this year. There was a moment when I was getting frustrated with remote teaching and I stole it from somebody else. We played Among Us, which is this weird phone game that you can play. We played it with the students. I was awful at it because I'd only practiced for like 45 minutes before we started playing. But it was just fun to be in that space with the kids playing. And for me, that's the reward that I need to like, okay, take a deep breath, spend 12 hours grading on the weekend. But I've got this other thing going for me. So that is my story of kind of survival, but also how routine can help you have these linchpins to make sure that you get through the school year.
Right. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. It's a good way to kind of finish this out. Like connection, getting back to the core of what we love and having that built in and knowing that's part of our routine so that we catch ourselves when we know we need to, because it's hard to do it when we're in it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Love it. Well, thank you all for joining us. Want to give you all an update. We are officially big We're officially on the main four podcasts. I call them the big four. So you can find us on Apple Podcasts now, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Look us up at Little Things or Big Things Education. And then you can also find us at littlebiged.com. We're official there. It'll link you back to the Peak State Mathematics, which is my tutoring, but it'll send you straight to our podcast, and you can find our teacher vault and all of the free stuff that we're just going to post there for you as well. So we appreciate you coming in. Please make sure you subscribe to us and catch us every week. We love you all, and we'll see you in a week.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, guys.